Don't worry, there'll be some more Daniel Pettit coming up very, very shortly, musically speaking. In fact, it'll be Lemuria. But that was The Joys of Genesis and Ballad of Big. And if you think, how does that tie in with book festivals and so on? Well, Stephen Michat is the main man, because as Sarah Dennis, I'm sure, would allude to in his fantastic book on the music industry and his work within the music industry, Gods, Gangsters and Honour. There's a whole sequence in which he deals with how he had to sort of promote Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins and all sorts of things. Responsible for the No Jacket Required thing for Phil Collins. So, you see, it all ties together. In the background now, somewhere in the west of England and doing magical things, of course, we have our co-author extraordinaire with Alan Stevens of a variety of marvellous things, a key person from Royal Holloway College, and she's Canadian as well, so what's not to like, basically. Fiona Moore, are you indeed there?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic.
Thank you for giving everybody the edited highlights.
Yeah, well, there we are, exactly. You know, it's getting the Blitvert approach to things, as they used to say in Max Headroom.
Yeah. I'm standing on a hilltop in the rain outside the Cinderford Library, and I've just watched a wedding party walk into the registry office next door.
What other radio station can paint pictures like that? Yeah. I mean, Dan, if I were asked you to come up with lyrics for a particular music, would there be any better than that?
Really? No, I couldn't do any better.
Well, I think I've actually just covered the original first line for Soft Cell's Say Hello, Wave Goodbye right there. So.
That's Soft Cell, eh? I was a flashback to the 80s.
Yeah, forget standing in the shadow of the pink flamingo crying in the rain. How about standing in the hill in front of the Cinderford Library watching a wedding party walk into the registry office in the rain.
Genius. That's all I can say. You know, I'm signing the contract at this very moment.
Good. Give me lots of money.
But surely, you know, you're a fellow academic. Surely we just do it for the love, not the money, Fiona.
Oh, we do. We do that for the love. But frankly, if somebody's going to ask me to write lyrics for Soft Cell for the money, then I will write some lyrics for Soft Cell.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Just for the benefit of possibly Evan Canwell and maybe Joe. Although I think Joe, you're beginning to appreciate the magic bullet connection things now.
I am
gradually. And I think certainly for Daniel Pettit's views, etc. Just to define what kind of things you do write and co-author with Alan Stevens, and what things are available to be purchased online or indeed in good bookstores and so on and so forth, and why in essence Middlesbrough's Litfest 2011 could seriously consider you coming up and maybe doing, as we did in Lincoln about 16 months ago, a joint package with Dean Wilkinson.
To tie in with the literary festival, Alan and I have written two published books and one forthcoming book together, all of them guidebooks to TV series for Telos Press, the one on Blake Seven, one on The Prisoner, and the one that's coming out is Battlestar Galactica. I've written a couple of academic books on my own and with colleagues, but they're not the sort of thing that make literary festivals or indeed attract much interest from anybody outside of my own esoteric section of anthropology and sociology. Outside of books, but still within the literature field, we do audio plays in the Caldor City, which is a tie-in to Doctor Who and Blake Seven, and Faction Paradox, which is written by Lawrence Miles and is a tie-in to the Doctor Who novels of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Sarah, if you're not getting the contracts out at this moment, I'll be surprised, really.
Oh, yes, and that's for the connection with Dean Wilkinson. Well, while I personally haven't done an awful lot with Dean, Alan and he tend to collaborate a fair bit on scripts, pranks, jokes, things like that. So this is why there is scope for getting us on the same bill.
And if you're actually looking at these kind of things and you're sort of thinking, well, yes, they haven't really talked about the kind of SF aspects of the Middlesbrough Literary Festival, well, Dean Wilkinson's Script Writing for Kids on Tuesday the 22nd of June at Easterside Library, an absolute classic there in all manner of marvellous ways, because he always goes down well, Dean, doesn't he?
He's great, Dean.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I did a quiz with him last year, I think.
Yeah, did the quiz at Berryfield.
Dean's stuff's very good, and his children's stuff is wickedly funny.
It was very much kind of precursor warm-up act for Lindsay Wagner, I felt, really. You know, that's the key thing from that. Daniel Blythe, of course, author of several Doctor Who books. He's actually talking on Friday the 9th of July at Berwick Hills Library. I notice he's actually free entry to Daniel Blythe. That's an extraordinary one.
For the children's events, they're all free entry.
It's fantastic, precisely that. And something which caught my eye, although probably it's not really in my age range, the Summer Reading Challenge, Space Hop. Join in exciting space hopping activities where the challenge is to read 6 books. I thought it was to read the books whilst you were actually one of those space hoppers.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Not in the library. Yet,
not in the library. No, no, exactly. We leave that, for the performers and various other factors. But yeah, excellent stuff. And, I mean, you know, how can we forget Saturday the 24th of July? We've already mentioned it once, Graham Harper up on board to deliver his package there. So actually, that sounds vaguely rude, doesn't it? You know, Graham Harper's going to deliver his package. I know that Alan Stevens is probably still in a state of shock to find that at number 49 in the SFX Hot 50 is Chris Chibnall of influential folk, etc. But it's there.
Yeah. Well, is that hot as in popular or hot as in most likely to be set on fire?
Now, look, he sort of came up with Torchwood. He's been writing the recent episodes.
Came up with Torchwood? I'm sorry. Even if he show ran it, Davies came up with the idea years back.
Well, he's showrunner on Law and Order, and he's written for Life on Mars. You know, I think Chris Chibnall has possibly been unfairly criticised. I think we need to start resuscitating his... well, actually, he probably doesn't need his career resuscitated because he's...
Well, to be honest, I wish, I'm sorry, you know, I know Alan tends to be a little bit of musically rock-vivery, and, he has specifically instructed me to ask on the subject of last week's Silurians episode,
oh, yes,
how one breastfeeds an egg. Regarding the appearance of the female Silurian, who's a little more buxom than one would expect from a dinosaur.
I'm holding up said photograph of female Silurian there. You know,
yeah,
there we have it.
Oh, good.
You know,
hold it closer to the microphone so the people at home
exactly,
can see.
Exactly so. Now, you know, so Chris Chibnall actually quoted in Doctor Who Monthly as saying from this point of view, he was brought into this because he received an email from the current showrunner, Stephen Moffat, with the words, mm-hmm, "The Doctor needs you."
Yeah. Well, the thing about Chris Chibnall is I really, really, really want to like him. I mean, you know, he's the... You know, he does a lot of work for these programs, and, he and I clearly have a lot of interest in common,
yes,
but, frankly, every single script of his I've seen has wound up being rather disappointing to me. You know, I can't speak for other people, but even Law and Order, you know, the problem, I find the Law bits perfectly wonderful. I think Jamie Bamber is lovely, and the older policeman whose name escapes me, but is bottle him and sell him, he's fantastic.
Mm.
But every time they go to the Law bit, it just completely falls down because the CPS is just the most unrealistically portrayed CPS I've ever seen. I mean, for some reason, the CPS, sort of failed to get somebody for murder, and so they're going to pull an Al Capone and get him for tax evasion. Look, I'm sorry.
You see, Fiona, it's getting to the stage now where I do feel, I mean, Sarah might have something to say about this, that he's reaching the stage where, because people are so sort of irritated with Chris Chibnall, he's almost becoming so bad he's good, really. It's kind of like coming round the other end. And, you know, again...
I will admit to a lingering fondness for Cyberwoman, but that's just because of the sheer spectacle of... Actually, come to think of it, I'm sensing a theme here. What is with Chris Chibnall and women with unrealistic breasts?
Well, his quote in Doctor Who Monthly about the female Silurians were, "There weren't enough female monsters, and men are generally more likely to be doing the invading." When asked, did he have to do much in the way of research on geology or mining, or were those already interests of his... His response, "They weren't already interests, but he did a lot of reading. That's one of the great things about writing Doctor Who."
Well, he might have done a bit better reading up on biology, because calling them Homo reptilius is completely inaccurate.
Well, I mean, again, that has been sort of addressed as sort of one of the ways forward, but clearly, you know, it's not the sort of thing that our wonderful biological folk would necessarily have gone. I mean, Darwin probably wouldn't have gone down that line, I wouldn't have thought. But never
mind. Carolus Linnaeus would not have gone down that line.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to Blake 7. Quick check in the studio.
What about it?
Joe, are you familiar at all with the series, which in many ways sort of served as a template for so many extraordinarily wonderful things? In fact, you know, do you even sort of recall the theme tune, which went something like this? Oh, actually, it went nothing like that at all, really. It's extraordinary, really, from that point of view. No, I should actually say that. So it went something like this. A Okay, does that ring any bells at all?
No, I can't say it does.
No, what about yourself, Dan?
I don't remember Ramp. I didn't watch Blake 10, but I do love science fiction.
Nice answer. I mean, that's one of the reasons why when you said that your next piece of music is called Lemuria, I automatically thought, oh, Robert E. Howard and you know, Conan the Barbarian and various other folk in that book. That's everything. Sarah, Blake 7?
I remember of it. I didn't watch it.
Of it, but not necessarily part of the Sarah Dennis overhands. Okay, and Evan?
No, sorry.
Ridiculous question, really. The man who made the Daleks was also behind a BBC SF show a lot darker than Doctor Who, according to SFX magazine's John Hamlin. This particular time, 4 days before Christmas, 1981, all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse, largely because the entire family was sat on the edge of the sofa watching the last ever episode of the aforementioned Blake's Seven. I hadn't realised until this piece came out that there was an attempt to bring the Daleks into the Blake 7 universe. Were you, I presume you were aware of that,
well,
Fiona?
Well, it wasn't actually a really serious attempt. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, speaking of the person who wrote the book, the idea was mentioned, it never actually kind of got much further than sort of alcohol-fueled conversation in the BBC canteen along the lines of, hey, maybe we could bring the Daleks in, that, you know, when they got back to the office kind of went, nah, let's just stick with what we've got.
Well, it's a definite thought on that basis. I mean, yeah, looking at it now, you know, people say it served as the influence in Joss Whedon's Firefly was taken on board by Blake 7. The sort of rogue scenario. I mean, setting the lead character, Rog Blake, being done for paedophilia at the start of it was not necessarily the sort of thing that we would expect from primetime BBC television in the 70s, is it? But there we are.
Well, it has to be remembered. And people make a lot of about that. And yes, you know, it's certainly not what one... it's certainly something rather controversial. But it also has to be remembered that although people were concerned about paedophilia in the 70s, they certainly weren't as concerned about it as they are now. And so it was... you know, it was considerably more controversial, actually, that the series had as its central characters terrorists, because at the time, you know, the IRA were a very real threat. And so this program was essentially saying to you, sympathize with the people that are blowing up your pubs.
Hmm. Were they? I mean, I always thought it was more a case of sympathize with the kind of Luke Skywalker rebels against the rebellion of the Death Star, really.
Not really. The thing is, I would argue that they hadn't really got that much in common with Luke Skywalker. For a start, Luke Skywalker's resistance is obviously incredibly well-funded and backed by the establishment. I mean, they've got princesses and ex-senators leading them.
And so, they're Americans, let's be honest. You know, so that's
always
good.
Yes, they are American.
Yeah.
And also, the antecedents of Star Wars are more clearly in... although both Blake 7 and Star Wars do have their antecedents in Western to some extent, Star Wars owes a heck of a lot actually to the Ring of the Nibelungen, because Lucas was secretly rather into Germanic mythology. So where Blake 7 kind of avoids the whole Wagnerian side of things.
I think there was a lot of space opera in Blake 7, to be fair. I mean, looking back over the episodes, even the sort of the final sequence and the final shot, you were into that. However, does this whet your appetite, Sarah? I mean, do you think, now having perusal through the article saying, oh, that's what Jan Chapple and Sally Knivet were actually doing, and of course, Glynis Barbo in the 70s and 80s, Stephen Pacey, of course, doing Del Tarrant's role. Do you think, I think I'm going to check these guys out.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I think we could have a science fiction event on,
Because, of course, that's the thing.
Well, I noticed actually the BBC the other week the BBC News was doing one of its kind of program promotion disguised as news items, in this case to promote the finale of Ashes to Ashes, and so they because of course you know so the rumor was that the finale to Ashes to Ashes was going to be big and confusing and revelatory, you know, so they did something along the lines of the top 10 strange TV series finales, and Blake 7 clocked in just after The Prisoner at number two.
Yeah. And that's it. And of course, in Blake 7, they didn't actually whip off the mask to reveal that it was Blake all the time. Or maybe they did.
Nope. They didn't bother with the mask, just with some scar makeup.
Notice how I've actually stepped away from what I feel might be sort of opening old wounds in the current remake of The Prisoner, of course, which came to its conclusion last week with Jim Caviezel and, of course, the wondrous person who was Gandalf in Lord of the Rings and, of course, Magneto in The X-Men. The actor whose name, of course, is...
Sir Ian McKellen.
Thank you.
And I prefer to remember him as Richard III myself.
Do you?
So, yeah.
I always thought Magneto, really. But never mind. Did you manage to, or have you caught up with the six shows in ITV's reimagining of course, number six?
I haven't yet, actually. I mean, I'm sure Alan's told you this, but what happened was we saw the first episode and we were underwhelmed but still willing to give it a go. But we've also been pretty busy lately, and so what we decided to do was to tape all six and then just watch them in a one big go, just to
Not that I want to actually sort of take this completely out of the way, but if I can just have another look at the SFX magazine that you have in front of yourself there. A couple of quotes from the editorial team there. And of course, these are mutual colleagues, Dave Golder and of course Dave Bradley, regular contributors to the show and so on. But one of the lines that came from the main team's Adrian Hill, the advertising sales manager, the new Prisoner series, Sorry But Snore. Russell Lewin, in fact, production editor, Patrick McGowan certainly made a wise decision to die last year so he could avoid seeing that appalling Prisoner series. I gave up after episode two. What about studio team?
I don't think to have many fans out there. Possibly Alison Graham of Radio Times is about the only person I've heard say a good thing about it.
Yeah, and you know, she's talked highly about Toby Whithouse's latest hospital drama science fiction series that comes up this coming Thursday. But The Prisoner, did we see any of the shows, Joe?
I started watching the first episode, but then I was kind of interest kind of died off.
Didn't
of it,
get after so. That. Didn't get beyond this first episode.
No.
Evan.
I didn't see the new one, but I have actually seen the old one.
Funny enough, there is. If you actually got rid of all the pipe, you just had sort of white stripes down you, you could actually sort of be developing that sort of number six look, really. Very good. Not a number. Free man. Will not be stamped, briefed, debriefed, indexed, or numbered. How did you actually come across the original series, then?
It was on ITV4. I think it was about tea time.
So. And you thought, what did you make, as somebody who basically was born 30 years after that series, or thereabouts, what did you make of it?
I thought it was really good, It was very surreal, which is supposed to be.
Kafkaesque, we like to say. Yeah. You know, in various ways. Well, I'll tell you what, you could do far worse than ask your parents, or your mum certainly, to actually get hold of a copy of Fallout, The Unofficial Guide to the Prisoner, by Alan Stevens and Fiona Moore, and that'll just explain even more magical things.
Yep.
See what I did there, Fiona?
Yes, thank you.
There we are. What about yourself, John?
I also saw some of the original The Prisoner. It was from the 60s, wasn't it, I think?
1967.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Sequel to Danger Man, and of course Patrick McGowan. Always very angry, very angry. You know, very angry, but he was fighting for the rights of the individual. I would personally suggest the new series works, but only if you don't see it as any connection with the original series whatsoever. It's a kind of reworking, reimagining, in the same way as Tim Burton's working of Planet of the Apes. It's got nothing to do with the original Planet of the Apes series, but you know, its own routine. It's fine, all right. Gives Charlton Heston a last hurrah in various ways. In fact, they're doing another Planet of the Apes movie as well, very shortly. Yeah, I can see that's gone down extremely well with the whole sort of system. CaldorCity.com is the best way of actually getting in touch with, of course, the Magic City scenarios. Fiona, do you Facebook?
I do, though I tend to keep a fairly low Facebook profile.
That's
so,
fine. That's the way
you want to. If you want to ping, ping me a friend, Alex, do feel free to. But
what I was saying, Fiona, and this is because I'm just sort of thinking about cross promoting here, is if you go to our wonderful facebook.com site, and yes, dear listener, this applies to you yourself as well, facebook.com/ Southside Broadcasting. Okay.
Oh, excellent. Right. I shall put you on my fan I shall like you straight away.
Well, there we are, you see. That's right. And you can also find out more about the Middlesbrough Literary Festival, because that's also got a literary festival thing, has it not?
We do.
Yes. It's fantastic. So you see, magical things work through. Joe, rapid promotion now, really. Can you ask those last two questions to Fiona Moore, please?
Have you had an enjoyable radio conversation with us today?
Oh, absolutely, as always. Always a joy to talk to Southside top of a hill.
It's been so long, of course, Fiona. I mean, because Alan's clearly done with your conference giving, with your sort of phone systems, which only allow two cats and one individual to actually man them at the same time.
We're working on that.
There you go. So the next question is?
And will you be talking to us in the not-so-distant future?
Well, if I don't, Alan will.
Hurrah!
Yes.
I'm talking to Charles Ather of Ather & Co. about what happens when you've had an accident at work, but your employer has shut down, gone out of business, or been bought out.
Even if your employer's gone out of business, you may still be able to claim compensation from their insurer. I'd urge anyone injured at work to contact Ather & Co. it's possible you could have a significant claim.
And Charles, it isn't just the money, is it?
That's right. By making a claim now, you can make a real difference to somebody's safety in the future.
Call Middlesbrough 222-575 or text ADVICE to 81400 now. Choose the one.
When you're living with cancer, the good days really matter. The day you get some answers about your treatment or about benefits or whatever's on your mind. You can take the first step towards more good days by calling Macmillan Cancer Support. Call 0808 808 0000 or visit macmillan.org.uk.
With over 80 ensuite bathrooms and a high quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides a perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs.
A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate residential, elderly EMI and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation as well as respite and daycare.
To find out more, please telephone 01642 308 188.
Serving the James Cook University Hospital, Middlesbrough, and beyond. This is Southside.